Imperfect Mellow by Susie.
All right. Hi. Thank you for coming on to my podcast. Welcome. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and to talk about my favorite subject, which is our personal energy. I started out really skeptical about all this stuff. I was an engineer for 20 years. And so very much left brain logical, you know, scientifically oriented. And if there was anything woo-woo stuff, I was kind of allergic. I was woo-phobic. And I, you know, cross my, you know, make the sign of the cross with my fingers and ward off evil. And that says whenever anyone started talking about any strange stuff. And I figured in my, you know, scientific mind, there's probably a logical explanation.
Right? Yes.
And that was the way I was. In fact, I wouldn't even allow anyone to bring a Bible in my house. That's how allergic I was to anything remotely weird. And I mean, not that that's weird for most people, that's normal. But for me, anything spiritual was not on my normal radar. And so I figured it was, you know, it was just superstition and the whole thing, you know, that people of that mind tend to do. And so that's where I came from. And I would never dream that I'd be talking to you, you know, 30 years hence in about energy and that sort of, and that I actually would become an energy healer and practitioner. I mean, that would have been blown my mind. So that's where I came from. That was my background. And I was good at my job. I loved my job. I got along well with my colleagues, even though I was one of very few women in engineering at that time. But somehow, by keeping it really on the intellectual plane and on the work-related plane and being, you know, friendly and cooperative and all that in terms of our work together, our teamwork and all that, I managed to earn the respect and affection of my peers on a purely platonic level, of course. And that gave me a certain level of confidence, I think, in my life. And the one area that I was not so confident in was the area of relationships, intimate relationships. So I was good if I was in my intellect and, you know, talking about technology and that sort of thing. But when it came to the nuances of relationship and that, I was kind of clueless. And it's like, I like the expression I once heard, raised by wolves. You know, nobody taught me this stuff, but maybe nobody teaches any of us this stuff. We kind of pick it up, I guess, from watching our parents and maybe our school friends, you know, whether they truly understand or not, we learn from conversations with them. But anyway, I felt a little bit awkward, and yet I still had relationships and stuff, but I just found it hard to navigate them a little bit. And anyway, finally, I met a guy. We got hit it off well, and we were together for 4 years. And we were the relationship had progressed to the point where we were living in my apartment together, and the relationship had progressed to the point where we were looking to buy a house together, and we were talking about marriage and kids and the usual trajectory that relationships hopefully follow when, you know, at least we think they should. And I loved him and felt like he loved me. And so everything to my neat ordered engineer brain seemed to be proceeding in that nice planned out trajectory. Right. I don't know what happened on his side, but it seemed like around the time we were looking to buy a house, after years of hindsight, what I suspect was that he was getting cold feet because, you know, it's a big deal to make that kind of a commitment. And I think looking at houses together brought it home, I think, to this is also a major financial commitment and all of this. And I think he started to inside freak out. You know, he hadn't gotten to that stage where he was ready to do that. And this was the first time it sort of was in his face. I didn't know that at the time. And wouldn't have even been aware of that kind of thinking at that stage. But years later now, having learned a lot more about psychology and human behavior and my own, I suspect that's probably what happened. And so he started changing his behavior towards me. He started becoming more critical and judgmental. And it was picking on little tiny things, you know, the way I combed my hair or, you know, and it just, and I tried to change my behavior to sort of keep the peace and that sort of thing so that we could be happy and move forward. And it just got harder and harder because he kept picking on more and more things that it to the point was almost like he didn't like the way I breathed, you know, and I'm not going to stop doing that, you know? So there was a slow erosion of self-confidence going on in that time. And it seemed nothing I did could change the picture. I think he was perhaps, I don't know, I'm guessing, but perhaps he was looking for an excuse to break up or whatever without actually doing it. And then he started wanting more time out with his friends, the guys at work, you know, they wanted to go out for a drink after work or whatever. And so I was okay with that. And then, and usually he called if he was going to be late so I could, you know, supper would be kept for him and that sort of thing. So I was used to at least that level of respect. But one night he didn't even call. He just stayed out. And he stayed out. And I got worried around 11, 12, no sign of him, no call, nothing. And so I started calling police, hospitals to see if he'd been in an accident, you know, the kind of thing we do when a loved one disappears, right? And no trace of him there. And then so I eventually went to bed, but of course I couldn't sleep. And then I started to, you know, dwell on what had been happening. And I started to have a feeling that maybe, you know, maybe our relationship was in trouble. It took a while for me to guess that, right? But that's, I was slow in those days. And then finally around 5:30 in the morning, he came in. And I called out to him, "I hope you have a good excuse." And I was praying that he did. I really prayed that, oh, I hope he has a good excuse, because it was pretty, I was pretty upset. And so his response was, "Do you want me to sleep in the other room?" Which I took to mean, no, I don't have a good excuse. And so at that point, it's like, okay, I have to know what's going on. So I called him. I said, "No, I want you to come in here and let's talk about what's going on." And it was like such a relief to him to speak about what was going on, which was he was seeing someone else. Mm-hmm. And he'd been keeping it a secret. And I think the guilt was eating away at him, which is why he'd become more and more critical. And so, but the problem is we've been best friends for 4 years, right? And so he thinks he's talking to his best friend. And here I am, his girlfriend. This is not what I wanted to hear, nor did I want to hear him glorifying this other person and how cute she was and this and that. Is like, yeah, it was like turning the knife right in the heart. And so it was needless to say, I didn't get any sleep. He fell asleep after unburdening himself, but I, and this shows you how far I'd gone in lack of self-esteem. I went into the bathroom to cry so that I wouldn't wake him. So I had degenerated into basically a doormat at that stage, which was unlike me. I was, you know, independent and all this stuff, but because of what happened in that relationship and the uncertainty and all of that, I went into this state of kind of helplessness and grief too, and it took me a couple of days to come out of the shock, and then I realized. When I felt into my own feelings, it was, you know, there was me thinking, well, what's he going to do now? Is he going to stay? Is he going to leave? Is he going to go with her? Is he going to drop her and we'll try again? Are we going to talk about it? Go into therapy? You know, I was, ooh, and it was all around revolving around what's he going to do, you know, and how am I going to respond? Mm-hmm. And so a couple of days of, it took me a while to get out of that shock. And I suddenly got really clear on what I was feeling. And it was, I can't stand this. I can't stand this whole situation. And then it occurred to me that I had a say in the matter. And then it's like I got a sudden sense of alignment and strength when I said that to myself when I realized it was like an insight or a thought that just popped into my head that reminded me that I had power too in this relationship, and that I could choose to end it if I wanted to, and we'll sort things out after. And at least I acknowledged I can't live with him while he's seeing someone else. That's just not on. And so I did. I broke up with him. I had him leave the next day. He had to find a place to live. That was his problem. And he did. He did move out. He was shocked that I was so direct, but I couldn't do anything else. I had to. It was like I had to honor my own spirit in that. But and I went through a strange experience of once he was gone, a roller coaster of exhilaration. I'm free. I don't have to please anyone. I don't have to be anything but myself, and complete despair. Like, what have I done? I've just, blown my only chance in happiness, kind of thing. And it felt like my life, which had been until then, proceeding nicely along this program track, right, had fallen off a cliff. And like the earth had opened up and swallowed up that future. And there was just this abyss in front of me. And I just went into a tailspin of despair. And all the self-esteem talk, low self-esteem talk, all the self-judgment, you're a loser, you'll never find love, blah, blah, blah. You're not good enough. And it just started clobbering me, my own thoughts. But I don't know where they came from. Perhaps, my self-esteem had been eroding for longer than I realized. But I fed that negative spiral. And I ended up, falling into that abyss of despair to the point where I was almost, I was contemplating suicide. It was like, what's the point of living if I can't have love and joy and, this wonderful future I was living for? I don't want to live. And I really felt like I, at that point when I hit bottom, it's like I splatted on the bottom, broke open, and felt like I'm completely worthless and unlovable. I might as well end it. And in that moment of complete and utter despair, I heard a voice in my head that said, "But I love you." And it was accompanied by a rush of energy down the top of my head. Remember, this is an engineer who didn't believe this woo-hoo stuff. This came out of nowhere, least expected. A rush of energy from my crown right down to my feet. And it was like a pinky gold energy. It was just tingling all the way up and down my spine, accompanied with this incredible loving energy. And the words that felt, they weren't just words, they felt they were coming from something. And the energy, this being, whatever it was vast, whatever, it felt cosmic in scale. And yet it also felt intimate. It felt like it knew who I was. Like, no, I wasn't just some, random atom in this vast universe. It actually knew me, and it knew my struggles. And I had no frame of reference for such an intelligence, right? That it didn't fit into my engineer mind sense of reality. But it felt wonderful. I actually felt like I'd been given this giant hug, and that every cell of my being was loved, and that I was just cherished. And I'd never experienced that from any human before. And at the same time, so I had this sort of paradoxical sensation of my mind expanding to hold the vastness, while at the same time feeling it in every cell. So this very strange paradoxical experience. And yet it felt so deeply real and important and loving. And it felt to me like this wasn't that I was special. It felt to me that this was the way things are for all of us. We just don't know it. And so we walk around thinking there's nothing more than this earth and this physical experience, right? And we ricochet off each other in anger and grief and other experiences, jealousy, envy, not knowing there's so much more to our being going on beyond all what's going on down here. And so and if I felt alone, that disappeared as soon as I experienced that. I knew this would be I could access it anytime. It felt to me like this is always there for me. I didn't know that before. But so it was mind blowing. And after the experience passed, I could recall the experience by just thinking of it, and then I would feel that rush of energy. And I still feel it to this day when I talk about it. And it's now for me, that was like the greatest gift of my life. It changed my life because after that, my engineered mind was blown. It knew, okay, what was that? I had no idea what it was, but I knew it was wonderful. And I knew that it was real. I felt it in my very body. And so I needed to explore, what is this reality that I know nothing about and nobody talks about? And that I had thought was complete, fabrication. And I had to experience it myself to realize, whoa, there's something more here to reality than we're told. And that it was real. It wasn't just a story, some nice story. It was actually, real, tangible. And so that launched me in my seeking journey, because the engineer had to figure this out. It just didn't have any frame of reference to put it in. And so I ended up, as an engineer, I go first to my head, right, to my intellect. So I went to reading, finding books I could find on the subject. And the closest thing I could come to, I thought, would be something like a near-death experience. People who'd had, similar expansions when they, died for a few minutes in surgery or something. Some of them had those types of uplifting experiences, and it changed their perception of life. So I read books on that, and then later I started reading. So as my mind gently expanded, and I started reading more and more, became more interested in metaphysics and the nature of reality, and I explored it for about 10 years intellectually, started doing yoga and started meditating and things like that to try and keep that experience alive in me and to help me to explore it deeper. And then, about 10 years later, I had learned enough about metaphysics that I realized, I had a deep wound from that relationship, and I hadn't addressed it. Right, I'd felt it, but I hadn't done anything to heal it and to clear it. And I knew enough by then from reading all the literature that if you have a trauma that you don't address, it can eventually arise in a physical illness. And this was an emotional trauma. And so I started to suspect, I could sort of feel things in my own energy field, if you like, or intuitively feel that something wasn't quite right. I wasn't sick yet, but it felt like a premonition of illness. And that if I didn't deal with and heal the emotional wounding that I'd gone through, in the psychological wounding, that it could very well manifest a serious illness. And I'm thinking like cancer or something like that. And so I had to go from just an intellectual exploration to actually starting to explore healing, it being healed. And the next part of my journey then was I didn't know, how do you heal emotions? I really didn't know, what do you do now? I know I need to do it, but I don't know how. And somehow along the way, I was living in Germany at the time, and I went to a New Age bookstore, which had some English metaphysical books. And just as I was looking at one particular bookshelf, the staff brought in some fresh copies of one of the books they were selling, and they put it right in front of my nose, and it was called The Healing of Emotions. And so I thought, I think this one's for me. And so that was the bridge to my next step. And after reading that book, it's by Chris Griscom, who's an American author. She's famous in Europe, not so famous in the US, but she lives in New Mexico and create a whole branch type of healing, which involved, it was a form of past life work. And she was made famous in Europe through Shirley MacLaine's books. Out on a Limb or Dancing in the Light, I can't remember which, but the Europeans loved that and started flocking to New Mexico to get their traumas healed through this type of regression work, which isn't limited to past lives. It can work with this life and that sort of thing, but it's a very effective, as I discovered, very effective form of treatment or therapy. So I had called, once I finished the book, I was excited that, ooh, I want to try this. I called the Light Institute in New Mexico and asked, I wanted to book a session. And they asked me where I was calling from. And I said, Germany. And that's when they told me, oh, we have a facility in France. Would you be interested in booking sessions there? And so I said, yeah. And so I did. I went and took sessions there. And just, you know, there were a whole sequence of events that happened one after the other. As soon as I'd set that intention to heal, things started falling into my lap. And when I went to the Light Institute in France, I got to know the owners of the hotel where I was staying. It was a 12th century French country inn. Mm-hmm. And they were, so I was staying there, giving me my meals and stuff. We would chat and that sort of thing. And the owner of the hotel was also the coordinator for the Light Institute's activities in France. So he had like a double job. And so I had my back a bunch of sessions there to do some deep clearing work. And then later, about 4 or 5 months later, I get a call from him out of the blue, went back was when I was in Germany again, telling me his wife and he were breaking up and he was leaving her the hotel. How would I feel about helping her run the hotel? You know, this is an engineer he's calling. I had no clue about running hotels or anything like that. So, but at that point, I had come to a place in my life. I had just turned 40 by then. And there was this sort of restlessness that we get when we reach that stage where we really look at our life and say, is this how I want it to continue to go? You know, what do I really want? And I was really tired of I loved engineering, but I didn't like the lifestyle of being in refineries all the time and hotel rooms and that sort of thing. So when this out of the blue, this invitation came to help run a French country inn, it sounds good to me. So I said, yes. And so it's like there were a series of spontaneous opportunities that happened. And each time I said yes, it took me to another stage of my path. And so I ended up moving to France, quitting my engineering job after 20 years, going to France and helping my friend to run this hotel. And it wasn't an easy job for her because her husband had left her for another woman. So same wound that I had. And she had 3 teenage kids to deal with. So she was going through trauma. And so I was kind of a shoulder to cry on, as well as trying my best to help her, although I knew nothing about running a hotel. So I inherited her husband's role as the coordinator of the Light Institute. So I ended up helping them with, you know, finding places for the facilitators to stay and give sessions and driving clients back and forth to them. And because of that role, I was given what they called family rate on sessions. So about a quarter of the price of a normal cost of a session. So I just took sessions as many as I could and went as deep as I could. So I'd say, every time there was a facilitator free and didn't have a client, I'd say, volunteer, I'll have one. And so isn't it interesting how Spirit organized it so that I could go deeper in my process? And who would have guessed that things would take a turn like that, right?
Yeah. Kind of fell into place.
It did. And a part of it is because first the opportunity arose and then I said yes. So if I backed out and said, nah, man, that wouldn't have happened. So there was two things, noticing an opportunity and be okay, yes. And so that sort of propelled me along my path. And these opportunities, you could tell they were from Spirit because they were out of the blue. They weren't something I was plotting or planning for. They just happened. I didn't go out searching for them. They just arose and I happened to be noticing. So after that, the director of the French Institute, I happened to have sessions with her, after a few sessions with me, she said, "You know, I think you'd be a good facilitator. Would you be interested in training?" So I said yes. And so I did. I trained with her and a few other people. And while I was training, learning how to do this work with other people, and it was fascinating work. What I really loved about it was, and this was something I would never even accepted before, was that we are much more than this one lifetime. And, you know, our consciousness is like a thread running through multiple lifetimes. And I learned so much by accompanying clients on their healing journey. I learned so much about what the soul does and why it does things. And I mean, that was mind-blowing, but also it suddenly started making a lot of sense out of the kinds of things that happened to us in our life. And it's not just about punishment and that sort of thing. It's about a larger theme that the soul is working on. For example, somebody might be wanting, someone's soul or it's wanting to explore power and the wise use of power. And like anything, we start out as beginners, and so we're not very wise. And so the first few lifetimes might be primitive ones where you're like a 2-year-old taking what you want, hitting other kids, you know, if they take your stuff. And so it's pretty self-centered. And then, of course, when you do that, other people don't like it. You know, if you go and take someone's wife because you want to, they usually get you back. And so those lifetimes are usually short and nasty. Ended painfully. So the next time around, the soul says, I won't do it that way. You know, this. Mm-hmm. And so the second life, they might choose not to exert their power, but rather to refuse to own power, and they become a victim because they attract oppressors, right? So that, which is from the larger perspective, a helpful journey, because you're now starting to experience what it's like to receive that type of treatment, which, you know, when you were in the early stages, you were just doling it out, but you didn't know what it felt like on the other side. So suddenly you have to walk a mile in the shoes of your victims. And now the key thing to remember is within each life, we don't remember previous lives. We sort of, to get an authentic experience, we block that out when we're born. So we block out our awareness of our larger thread, if you like, so that we can have a fully authentic experience in that one life that we're in. And then we make decisions based on what's happening to us. But also we have a connection with our higher self, which remembers some of the lessons we learned from the previous life. And so, you know, we make decisions often when we die. We make decisions like, I won't do that again. Or we make vows, you know, I'll never let someone. And those vows carry on. And they show up unconsciously in our lives, and they affect how we behave. So somebody might be completely allergic to any positions of power after that, and like reject all power entirely, not realizing that that doesn't work either. And they end up having a miserable life as a victim as a result, because they didn't even stand up for themselves against even small things. And so they get trampled on, and then end of that life, I'm not going to do that again. So it goes, right? A series of lifetimes. And there's so many themes that we can explore from that larger perspective. And that's what I discovered through this work, was this whole soul journey perspective. And when you see it in that light, suddenly the things that we go through in this life start to make sense. They don't make sense otherwise. It just seems like senseless cruelty and this and that. But if you're able to, and that's what's so wonderful about that type of work, is that you're able to actually ask your higher self to show you why you chose that experience in this lifetime. And it'll show you another lifetime before that, where you were exploring it in a different way, and how this was needed to balance that. And I really got that, you know, and some people call it karma, but it's not about punishment. It's about learning. And so like learning anything here, we make mistakes, and the only way to grow is to learn from our mistakes. And so that same principle seems to apply on the larger soul journey as well. And so we can't really, when you start to realize that that's going on behind the scenes for all of us, that you can't really judge people anymore, because you don't know what the bigger picture is that they're acting. And you know, they may be acting out, but that's just part of their learning. And it's, yes, they can do dangerous, they can hurt people and that sort of thing, and abuse people. But you can understand it from that perspective. When you're the person who's had the abuse, obviously you don't ever want to forgive them. You feel wounded. You might feel like a victim and all that. But it helps when you realize that you too had a say in the matter, and that your soul actually intended not to punish, but to teach you something important, to build your character and your strength, and to teach you something. In a case of abuse, it's often about power that we're learning about. And so we're learning through experiencing it, we're learning compassion for others. And so and that's an important lesson. If we're going to step into our power, we need to be responsible with it. And so if we have compassion for those over whom we have power, you know, we're leading or teaching or whatever, that we are in a more powerful position to them. If we have compassion for them, we're not going to abuse them, because it hurts us to do that because of that compassion. And how do we learn compassion? By experiencing it ourselves at some earlier time in our lives. So many healers come from abusive backgrounds times of abuse, because there's also this desire to understand, why did this happen to me? And, how do I move beyond the wound? And that's really the journey of the healer, is healing your own wounds, and in the process, learning how to heal. As you go through it yourself, you become able to guide others through the same terrain. And you do it with compassion, because you've been there. So that's kind of how my healer mentality arose along the way for my journey.
No, yeah. And as I was hearing you talk, I was like, are you telling my story? Because I mean, I went through, you know, the exact same thing. And it was always instilled in me, like from childhood, like, you know, you have to go to college and you have to, you know, get this career and blah, blah, blah. And so just like you, like I was like going through this trajectory, or, you know, the things that I was supposed to do, and et cetera. And, you know, I was, I got married at a young age, and I went to college, mm-hmm. I went to school. And so, like, you know, all of the things that I felt like I was supposed to be doing. But then my partner at the time also started seeing someone else. And, you know, I went through the exact same thing that you went through, as far as all of the emotions and all of the wondering, like, you know, why, and just the exact same stuff. And so I feel like that experience was life-changing now, like when I look back at it, because that does kind of jumpstart this self-healing and just self-reflecting.
You have to, right? Mm-hmm. To retain your sanity, ultimately you have to explore and say, all right, what now? Kind
of thing. Yeah. And that really, you know, after that experience, I was like, I started questioning everything. Like, well, why am I even following this trajectory? Like, why, you know, who made this up? Like, you know, just kind of questioning stuff. And I'm like, I'm just going to go and follow my own trajectory, create my own journey, and just do what I want to do. And, you know, I do work in the, I guess you could say, healing profession too. Like, I'm a mental health professional. And yeah, it is true. Like, you go into it thinking like, oh, I'm going to help other people, you know, but it really becomes a self-healing journey. Like, you kind of have to deal with your own stuff.
So. Yeah, there's no way of avoiding that. And even when you have clients, you're learning from them too, right? You probably notice that they're dealing with a particular issue. And as you're helping with that, you start to get insights mm-hmm. that help you, right? And so it's, I love how that works. It's a two-way street. And so I learned so much from my clients when I was doing the past life and about the nature of the soul, you know, just by asking their higher self stuff. And you could ask questions about that. So, and they answered because they're in this sort of, they're not hypnotized, but they're in a very altered, you know, relaxed, altered mm-hmm. state. And they're able to access that kind of information. It just floats up out of their unconscious to their conscious mind in that altered state, and they're able to speak about it and experience it. So it's like they're experiencing some of the trauma in other lifetimes in the moment as it's unfolding, but they, you know, detached enough that they can actually think about it. It's not just get absorbed in it, but also understand it a bit more with the bigger context. Yeah. So
yeah. Is that different than, because I've heard a lot about like your spirit guides and, you know, et cetera. Is that different than when you're asking like your past self? Or
I ask the higher self. So we all have a wise, it's really the connection with our own soul.
Yeah.
You know, it's the part that's connected with that thread. It's who we really are at a higher dimension. And so it already knows it's infinite. So it knows the whole trajectory from beginning to end. You're just experiencing one of the beads in that necklace, right? So as it's, you just temporarily dipped into human reality for this lifetime, and then you pop back out again when it's the end of your life and you rejoin the thread of who you are. You learn from what you just had. And that contributes to the whole of you. And then after that, you spend some time thinking about what you want to do next and where you want to proceed with your, and so your higher self is also working with you, and you might have guides working with you to help plan the next lesson, the next lifetime on your journey. And you're actually picking things like many people right now, there's a lot of stuff about diversity, gender, race, and all that stuff. But actually, from a soul perspective, none of that is part of us. It is part of the life we choose to be born into. And so it's like the props and the costumes and the role that we choose for that particular life. But it isn't something that is, there's no such thing as a gay soul or a black soul or a Caucasian soul. I mean, the soul doesn't need that. It doesn't have a body. It's consciousness. And that gives it so much freedom to explore all of those things and whenever it wants. So it can explore racism. It can explore, you know, what it's like, especially in the power journey. If you're learning the theme of power, a lot of people are exploring themes of slavery versus oppressor. And so they'll have lifetimes as a slave owner or a slave driver or that sort of thing, and then followed by lifetimes as a slave, where they don't remember that they were the slave. They just know that they're a slave now, right? And so they're going, so there's this larger learning that's going on about the nature of power and how you work with it in that particular situation. And it's nothing really to do with the specific circumstances and, you know, genetics and all of that stuff, which we pick. That's just kind of your toolkit that you come in with for that life. And it's all serving the larger journey that we're going on, which I find uplifting. To me, that gives me hope, knowing there is a place where it all makes sense. It doesn't, you know, when we're in it, unless we start to open our minds to these concepts, it can seem like an extremely cruel world. And it is. And we don't have to be devastated by it. We actually can find, ultimately, the empowerment is about finding your own power so that you can make decisions in your own life and be more creative with what life throws at you. And then eventually it leads into love and using the wise use of power is loving, and it's empowering. It helps others, and without taking them over or telling them what to do, it nurtures the development of power in others, just like you would with your child, right? You want them to become independent and healthy and happy. And so you're using your wise power as their parent, if you're doing it right, honoring their budding independence while watching over them at the same time. I mean, I don't have children, but I can imagine that that's very much part of the journey of the parent, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is all just very interesting to me. And, you know, I feel like at the beginning stage of learning about all of this energy stuff. And I started reading this book called, I have it right here, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it talks a lot about that at the beginning, like just with energy, like all the, what is it? Metaphysics? Is that what you were?
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like the general top. It's not physics. It's metaphysics. Yeah. The physics behind the physics. Right?
So, you know, all of this is still very like abstract to me when I'm reading about it, but
It's pretty mind blowing actually.
Yeah. But it's interesting. Can you talk a little bit about just personal energy and just like how to become more aware of it and stuff like that, and like how we could tap into this, because I feel that it's there, it's important.
Yes.
Like, and then especially like being around other people, I do notice energy sometimes, and it could change your own energy, right?
Absolutely.
Like can you talk a little bit about that?
Glad to. Yeah. And, you know, my journey didn't end with the past life work. I later moved into the energy work and became an energy facilitator. So I got to understand energy from that perspective. So yes, definitely. So one of the things that people don't realize is that we're constantly picking up energy. It's a normal sense, like all of our physical senses. And if you watch an animal, they have it. They can sense people. They can sense people a mile away, you know, and they take shelter if they need to or whatever. So we have that same ability. We've just been taught to ignore it. And if you look at indigenous cultures, they totally know about it. They use it themselves. And they also attune with, say, the energy of the earth for healing and for their own sense of strength and power. They make use of that. And we can do that too. And that's an essential skill. It's called grounding, an essential skill that helps us, especially if we're in a place where we feel unsafe. It helps us to feel safe. And all it is you send roots down. You imagine yourself connecting to the center of the earth, just as if you were a big tree, sending down roots. And then you allow the earth's energy to come and support you and strengthen you. So now, instead of just being on your own two little feet, you've got this giant planet as part of your base. So now you feel much more stable. One of the things to remember about energy is that it follows thought. So that is how you manage it, by actually visualizing the exercises that you do things often involve visualization. And so pretending to be a tree, you're not actually becoming a tree, but you are aligning with that straight energy down and connecting with the planet itself, which is, if you connect with the deeper energy of the planet below where all our buildings and stuff are, deeper, like I just go straight to the center, it's not affected by all the battle energy and all the stuff that goes on the surface, right? Where burial grounds are, you know, battlefields, and they all carry energy. All those saturate the soil. And so when people who are sensitive go into an area of a battlefield, they can feel that. They'll feel anxious and that sort of thing. You know, most people probably aren't that sensitive, but for anyone who's empathic, they can't stand to be there for very long. Same thing in hospitals, right? You know, go into a hospital, you picking up the fear of everybody in the hospital and the urgency of the people who are working there and all that. So it's a hugely stressful environment. And so it helps to be able to manage your energy. And there are things you can do to like create a bubble around yourself of safety. Grounding is an important piece of it, so that you've got that stability. And then what you do is to create a bubble of safety around you, what you're wanting to do is you want to get into a feeling the energy of love or gratitude. And so you can picture somebody you dearly love or delight in. And just in that instant that you think of them, your heart opens. And you're feeling your love for them, right? And it's your love. So you get, what you do is you take your love and you fill your field with this. You just imagine expanding it to fill your whole, like a balloon around you, a bubble around you, as far as you can reach, your personal space, and you fill it with that energy. And it takes practice to do that. At first, you know, you might do it, but you'll get distracted and it'll go away. So you have to build up your ability to hold that and to stay in that state of mind. And gratitude works really well as a high frequency energy. And so what happens is it's like it inflates this energy container around your bubble, and any negativity, because fear and guilt and shame and all that, these are low frequency energies. They get repelled by higher frequency energies. It's like the higher frequency wins, provided it's strong enough. And so it's like you've got a Teflon shield around you, and those negative energies can't enter. So you're able to walk around in this place of peace and gratitude. And it, as I say, it's an acquired skill. You do have to practice it, you know, because it doesn't come. We're so disconnected from our energy in this culture. But the good thing, you can practice just by yourself to begin with. And then what you can do, once you kind of get the hang of it, and you'll feel good when you've got it expanded, you'll feel like you're safe. So you practice on your own. And then what you can do is you can imagine a scenario where you might feel unsafe. And then you do it in your imagination in that scenario. And the energy follows thought. So you're building your bubble, if you like, even while you're looking at something scary, and you just notice, wow, that helped, right? And so by practicing that just by yourself without being in a dangerous situation enough, it becomes easier for you to switch states. And one of the things you can do in that state is, you know, when you're practicing, is practice by creating an anchor. Have you heard of neuro-linguistic programming?
No.
Well, it's about using little anchors to create a shift in state. So you could do something like either tug an earlobe or, you know, something unobtrusive, maybe pinch your little finger every time you achieve that bubble successfully. So every time you practice, it's creating neural pathways that link that feeling and that state in your brain, and so it makes it easier to get there every time. So eventually, you can take yourself in any situation, and you can just think bubble or squeeze your little finger or whatever, and you're suddenly there. You're ground. You have all your resources available to you in that state. One of the things that people worry about is, oh, if I have my bubble up, you know, I'm separate from people. But actually, no, you influence them because you're carrying love in your bubble, and that love radiates out. And all your bubble does protect you from incoming stuff, but in terms of negativity, but it allows, as you're holding that beautiful frequency of love, which is high, you're uplifting those around you, and you don't have to say a word, right? So you might be in a meeting or something, and somebody's, you know, angry or whatever, and you, without saying a word, go into your bubble. You're radiating that higher frequency into the whole room just by being in it yourself. And if you practice it, you'll notice that they start to diffuse, like their anger diffuses. They start to become more reasonable, then they start apologizing. And then we start to have a real conversation about what the real issue is and all that. And you didn't have to say a thing. You just had it to hold that frequency. And yeah. You probably noticed that I see you have a little daughter. Mm-hmm. And she's got this amazing smile. And I can imagine she's doing that to you all the time, right? Like she looks like a very loving being, and I can imagine that her energy is affecting you because she's just radiating it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, when you were talking about that right now, I'm picturing, as an example, you know, in my relationships or in general relationships, like when you're having a disagreement on something, you know, instead of like arguing and, you know, feeding into that negative energy, a lot of the times I tend to just remove myself from that, because I don't want to feel drained. I don't want that negativity. Like, I don't know, And so a lot of the times I'll separate myself and just, you know, keep doing my own thing or, you know, meditate, whatever, and to just feeding my positive energy. And I'm just like, okay. And you're right, because then the other person, like you said, will come and apologize or be like, oh, you know, like, let's talk about it. And
yeah. It's magic, right? It's really, so this, when I started learning about energy and that we actually can use it for good and help others without doing or saying a word, right? They don't even know we're doing it, but it influences them in a positive way. I mean, energy can be used negatively too. And, you know, there are repercussions later, ultimately, this serves both us and the other person. Not only does it help us, but it also helps others. And you're right, it really does make a huge difference in relationships. And it, you know, I've used it in situations that were very tense. And, you know, I was being accused of something and this and that. And I just listened and I went into that compassionate heart space with my bubble. So I didn't feel threatened physically having that space. And that's what happened. The venting wound down, and then the person became open to learning more, and in the end, it turned out to be a really great discussion. So I've seen that happen again and again. So those are just some really simple things, and there's a whole bunch more. Just simple self-care, you know, and even learning to just know what's going on in you, right? Never mind sensing other people. First, we need to sense ourselves and what's going on in us emotionally, because often, you know, we leave our emotions behind. If you know, for some people anyway, we'll go partly out of their bodies in fear. It's like they zone out. It's called scattering, and because they're afraid, and so they're not really present to the conversation anyway, right? They're just kind of outside their field. And so the things you can do to help somebody who, like that, come back in gently and that sort of thing. We have all these habitual ways of being in relationships, you know, defenses against certain situations, and they often make things worse. And so it really does make sense to learn how to manage your energy so that you can, you know, be more resourceful in the situations that life throws at you. And also noticing where's my energy off? Where am I, we change from day to day. Sometimes we have more energy and other times it's falling down. In our culture, there's a lot of judgment about when you feel more introverted, you know, when we feel contracted. Usually what people don't realize is that's normal when you've had a big expansion experience. So if you've had a really happy, joyful time, or you've learned something new and you're all excited, our energy very naturally afterwards starts coming back into us and it's integrating. And it needs to be able to really learn everything we need from it and to benefit from it. And it's like going into our memory and our cells and all that stuff. And that takes us to be, requires us to be quiet and sort of more introverted. And it's a natural process. And then when that process is finished, the integration's finished, then a new energy wave builds. And then we go out back into the world again. Then we start. And so it's a constant wave that we have to learn how to surf. And in our normal, you know, workaday culture, we're expected to be up all the time. We're not expected to have those days of retracting and contracting. People are concerned there's something wrong with us when that happens. And we think there's something wrong with us, right? We'll even judge ourselves for that. We might even think we're depressed when really we're just contracting. And so because energy follows thought, if we're telling ourselves that we're doing something wrong, we'll start to worry, which lowers our energy and makes it take longer to recover. So yeah, there's a lot to understand on that.
And I love this. We could talk about this forever. It's so interesting. Yeah, you're right. You know, like I have those days where I'll just be like, oh, something's off. And you're right. Yeah. If you kind of stay there, like, it's just, you know, not yeah,
you'll get insights. You're just being with it without judging. Mm-hmm. It's so important. And you'll get insights that will come up. And also you'll notice what you feel. Well, you start to know your own feelings and you'll find if something isn't right and that you need to take some sort of action, you know, like I did in, you know, when I realized I couldn't stand the situation that I was in. If I hadn't paid attention to what was going on inside, you know, I would have just been scrambling and struggling. But for some reason, and I knew none of these skills at those days, I paid attention to how I was feeling. And that informed me of something important that I needed to do. And so that's what the benefit of going inward on those contraction days is, that information is available to us. We're not so busy that we don't pay attention.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you coming on and talking about this. If people were wanting to find you or get more information, where can they find you?
Yeah, I have a website called energyisreal.com, all one word. And I have written a book called Energy is Real, a Practical Guide for Managing Personal Energy in Daily Life. So all those exercises I mentioned, they're in the book. Plus, you know, there's 23 of them in the book. And so what they can do is if they go to the website, there's a blog and all kinds of other information and links to scientific mm-hmm. science about energy. But also they can sign up for a free sample chapter of the book, the first chapter, which is all about beginning to sense energy. So there's 6 exercises in that chapter, all about learning to develop your energy senses. So they can get that for free. Just sign up, leave their email, and I'll send them a download. And the other thing is to associate with that, there are in the free resources part of the website, there are audio recordings for each of those 6 exercises. So they can just follow along, listen to the audio recording and just follow along to try them out for themselves.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate it once again. Well, thank you.
My pleasure. It's so much fun. I love talking about energy. It's a passion. Yeah. And it's so needed. So I'm really grateful for the opportunity to chat with you and share some of this stuff with your listeners. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Hi friends, thank you for listening to this week's Imperfect Mellow podcast episode. Remember to like, subscribe, and give us a 5-star review if you enjoyed this week's episode. You can also follow us on social media, on TikTok and Instagram, imperfect.mellow.therapy, and visit the website imperfectmellow.com for more blogs, podcasts, resources, and other fun stuff. And don't forget, we now have our awesome mental health merch on our website. We have t-shirts, hoodies, and a bunch of other really cute stuff. Go ahead and check it out. Talk to you soon and be well.